This episode of the Intelligent Rebel Squadcast was brought to you by Black America, Inc., a trillion dollar nation. Black America, Inc. is a piece of literature that details and illustrates the socioeconomic solutions that Black Americans can implement in their communities today. Whether it be being captains of our own industries, creating our own political parties, or just learning to strengthen our overall health and wealth, Black America, Inc. is what Black Americans and Americans in general need to get to the next level in 2017 and beyond. For too many years, we have been talking about the problems and not the solutions. For too many years, we have been pointing fingers at each other without talking about the solutions. This is why Black America, Inc. is important. If you're ready to build yourself up, rebuild your community, head on over to Amazon.com and order a copy of Black America, Inc. today.
I know you can feel the magic, baby. Turn motherfucking lights down. Let's go, what up?
What up, homie?
I mean, it's what you expected, ain't it? Let's go. Turn the music up in the headphones. Yeah, that's perfect. You gotta take your time, make a nigga wait on this motherfucker. Make a nigga mad and shit, like niggas usually just start rapping after four bars, nigga, go in. Just start dancing this motherfucker. Yeah. You just come out of nowhere.
I feel like a Black Republican. Money I got coming in. Can't turn my back on the hood. I got love for them. Can't clean my act up. Good, too much thugging. Nah. Probably in the back in the hood. Like, fuck it.
You. Good morning. Good afternoon. And good evening. You intelligent, rebellious people. It is your boy, Doe Dudes, coming live again for another epic episode of the Intelligent Rebel Squad Cast. Yep. 19-5, ladies and gentlemen. Black conservatives. Now, if you guys have noticed, in this political spectrum, we've only seen one type of political black, which is liberal, left, Democrat, etc., etc. And I felt like because there is another side, because there are people who are well-rounded, intelligent, who are conservative, we need to start giving them a platform to be able to speak on their ideals and have a broad conversation, an intelligent conversation on the political realm in America. So that's what I did. I took it upon myself to create the Black Conservative Series, where in the next few weeks we're going to talk to three Black conservatives and pick their brains on, you know, how they view America, their communities, and things of that nature. So we started off with Carl. I learned a lot, and I think you guys are going to learn a lot as well. You know what I mean? So I'm not going to talk y'all ears off. You already know what you guys need to do to get ready for this episode. Roll something, light something, and get ready for the Intelligent Rebel Squad.
Standing on the roof of my building, I'm feeling the whirlwind of beef I inhale it. Just like an acrobat, ready to hurl myself through the hoops of fire. Sipping 80 proof, bulletproof under my attire. Could it be the forces of darkness against hood angels of good that form street politics? Makes a sweet honest kid turn illegal for commerce to get his feet out of them Converse. That's
my
word.
I feel like a Black Republican. Money keep coming in. Can't turn my back on the hood, I got love for them. Can't clean my act up for good, too much thugging them. Nah. Probably in the back of the hood,
I feel like a Black militant.
Yeah, man. So y'all know, like, I'm real fresh with all this political stuff, and I felt like I couldn't speak on it. You know what I'm saying? I had to have people who have been, you know, on the circuit, who have been, you know, having their finger on the pulse of what's going on in the political realm. Everybody has been a little bit more politically aware since Trump and Hillary, you know, even coming off of Obama. I feel like the Obama administration, for people like me, my age, I'm 27, I voted for him in, you know, 08, you know, all of that. You know what I'm saying? So everybody's more politically aware. And I feel like it's only right to have somebody who's been in there to speak on it. So I got my man Carl on the line, civil rights. Say what up to the people, bro.
Yo, what's up? How y'all doing?
Yes. So before we get into it, man, you can let the people know your background, man, and you know how you give it up.
My background is far in regards to what, man. I'm just a black man out here trying to get it. You know what I'm saying? I have industry wise, I've worked in a lot of different various industries, so I kind of have a pretty well rounded experience in terms of knowledge in various business industries. I dabbled in the politics, a couple years back with local politics with the New York State Republican Club. So that kind of gave me a lot of insights on, like, the actual workings and the going-ons of the political structure. It actually showed me the value of local government as opposed to national government. So funny, people are worried about the president. I tell people all the time, like, the local politicians affect your life way more than any president does if you really want to get down to the meat and potatoes of it.
Absolutely. So that's what we're dealing with, ladies and gentlemen. So let's jump right into it. So you're a black Republican, conservative, libertarian. What's your political affiliation?
I'm technically a registered Republican, but that's more based on where I live because I'm from New York. So a lot of libertarians who would run under a Republican ticket, and you have closed primaries, so you have to vote in your party. What I would identify as, technically, I would most closely associate as a libertarian, but with fiscally conservative views, and I'm socially agnostic. I don't really, for most social issues, I don't really have any skin in the game. Like, I don't care about gay marriage. If they make gay marriage legal, it's fine. Like, pro-choice, I don't have any skin in the, anti-abortion game. So a lot of the socially conservative positions I really don't care about. My conservatism would really apply to, fiscal policies, government expenditures, tax policies, etc.
Okay, cool. So let's go back a little bit. Were you raised in this conservative type of a household? Is this your background? Is this where you come from? Or is it more of a Democratic?
I'm the only one that votes Republican in my household. My mother, my brothers, they're all Democrats. I grew up in a politically conscious household. Here's the thing about being raised. Most black people, if you really want to analyze how most black people are raised with very conservative values. So technically, if you want to look at how black people are being, if you ask them, like, if you put a list of conservative values on a questionnaire, most black people would identify as a conservative. They don't publicly identify as conservative because a lot of black people don't realize how conservative they are. Like, people that say, oh, conservatives are racist, but then they'll go in the church and say, the same church that'll say they hate all gay people, so, they're conservative, they just pick and choose what they want to be conservative about, but, like most black people, I think I grew up the same way, everybody, grew up Democrat, but being Haitian, we're a lot more in tune to political structure. Being Haiti was an independent country for a long time, so Haitians in general, as corrupt as Haiti is, the average person in Haiti is still attuned to what's going on in political structure. Whether it's good or bad, corrupt or not, people are just aware. So naturally, when they come here and assimilate to American culture, they're going to be aware of the political structures that happen, but one thing that happens in our, where that disconnect happens, where even though people have conservative values, but they identify as Democrat, happens is a lot of people have to confuse apathy with support, where a lot of most black people don't have the time and energy, or the resources, or the luxury to be worrying about every single little political thing, like to trail their, local congressman voting record on every single act, things of that nature. So at the end of the day, what matters to black people are basically the big staple issues. They just want to know, are you racist? Is this motherfucker going to be against black people or not? Like, are these going to be one of the people that's just going to, let us rock? So that's what it all comes down to. And Democrats, for the most part, usually present more digestible platform for the average black person, so that's what people tend to lean on. That's not necessarily where the historic split happened, but that kind of explains the dichotomy of what's going on, like, in modern times.
Yeah, because that was my whole thing. Like, as I'm gaining more knowledge about the political spectrum, particularly among black people, and then I'm hearing, you know, certain conservatives, black and white, telling me about this thing called the Democratic or the Democrat plantation. You know, I didn't, like I said, growing up, I wasn't really concerned. You're right. Like, I wasn't concerned about the political spectrum. I was outside doing what I wanted to do. I was a kid. Like, it wasn't until 2008 to where I was even eligible to vote, and the vote was incredibly easy for me. You know what I'm saying? So, do you, you know, what can you tell me about the Democratic plantation? You know, the way, you know, how they call it.
To understand the Democratic plantation, you got to kind of go back into history of where the black support for the Democratic base actually originated. There were pretty much three major things that happened that really shifted the black support base to the Republican Party. Because remember, at the time, the Republican Party is the one who fought for abolition of slavery. So at that point, most blacks were Republicans, were identified publicly as Republicans. What happened was, the first thing that happened was the Great Depression. So as with any financial boom or bust, the adverse effects are always going to, you know, disproportionately affect us more than any other segment of the population. So if the Great Depression was bad for white people, you could just imagine what it was for black people. So now at that time, FDR introduces the New Deal, which is, you know, the historic series of entitlement and social welfare programs that basically provided sustenance to black people where they really had no hope. So that was the big, that plan alone was the first major, that took the biggest black bloc out of the Republican Party. The second thing that happened was in the following election, Nelson Rockefeller, who was more of a moderate coming out of New York, was running for the Republican ticket, and he lost to Barry Goldwater. That was the second thing that shifted. Barry Goldwater is more of an extremely hardline, fiscally conservative person. And at that point, black people, that type of policy would not have helped black people in that era. So don't get it twisted. I could say that even me as a black person at that era, I could have possibly switched at that point too, because the reasoning was, you know, there was legit reasoning at that point. Then the third thing that happened was during the election of Reagan, and, you know, the whole war on drugs era, that basically took every black person that was left in there out of there. So
right.
Those three things shifted the basic fundamental belief that Democrats are good, Republicans are bad for black people. So that fundamental thought is ingrained in most black people. I mean, it's ingrained in my head, and I don't identify as a Democrat, you know what I'm saying? So
yeah,
that's where that fundamental belief, so that's where that Democratic plantation comes from, because with that fundamental belief, blacks throw their support behind a party that doesn't necessarily have to have their interest at hand, because at the end of the day, they know that the black people are going to believe that they have their interest in hand. Whether or not the policy is reflected or not, it's a fundamental belief that these are the good guys and these are the bad guys.
And you know what, man? And I felt that. I've seen just throughout this time, now that I'm an adult, I see how, especially with the greater influence of the media, how people are now just easily influenced from the news, easily influenced by speeches. And you know, anybody can say anything, basically. You know what I'm saying? They could gas you up and get you behind or rally behind something. And one of those things just made me think, like, yo, what makes it so appealing that these people can, you know, let's not say it's just black people, you know, politicians, this is what they do as a career. But when we're talking about, like you said, black people mainly focusing on black issues, it's like, if we have seen this not work, if we have been doing this for decades and it's not working, why stay on the plantation? You dig what I'm saying? Like, why do you think we're staying on it?
Well, you have to, again, I compare the relationship to something of a domestic violence or abuse victim. Like, the fundamental belief at the end of the day is that for a lot of them, not some, I'm not just speaking for all, but that other person fundamentally loves them. Like, although this person is beating me, harming me, and abusing me, I know at deep inside this person still loves me and this person still cares for me. So, believe it or not, as irrational as it sounds, that fundamental belief will take people far. Like, faith is a powerful drug. So faith can allow people to do things that we have the human capacity to accomplish. simply based off of faith. So, again, if you have the faith that at the end of the day, these people, whatever they do, is going to be better than whatever the other people do, it doesn't matter what they do. You know, at the end of the day, the other person would have been worse. That's the fundamental, and that's part of the, that's the fundamental cycle we got to break, where we have to understand that with that fundamental belief in our community so prevalent, we're basically still slaves. And we have no voice and no electoral process. And I tell people that's why your issues are largely ignored in this election. And they're going to become even more ignored in future elections, because at the end of the day, they know where your voting block is going. So why do they even need to appeal to you?
That's real. That's real. So you touched on how earlier in American history, Black Americans were more so Republican. Now, I was talking to Todd Millionaire a few episodes back, and he was talking about, I want to get his name right, was it Reginald Lewis or something like that? And okay. And he had created like programs for young Black men and Black women to take advantage of the, I think, Nixon or Reagan administration. Now, historically, have there been, you know, Republican figures, you know, like I was doing my Googles, and I think like the first state senators were like a bunch of Black men and stuff like that. Like, do you have any like historical context for the Republican Party for Black people in America?
I mean, you know, we all know the standard, you know, Usual Suspects, Clarence Thomas, et cetera, et cetera. I don't really like talking about those people, because I mean, people have done accomplishments, like, you know, don't get me twisted, like becoming the first Black this or the first Black that is an accomplishment or whatever, but I'm more concerned about what actual tangible stuff results out of that. I would more like to talk about Black Republicans who don't identify as Republicans. Like, for example, Marcus Garvey. At the end of the day, someone like Marcus Garvey, people like Malcolm X, people like Louis Farrakhan, if you break down their beliefs and the things they were espousing and the teachings they were trying to give to Black people, they were rooted in conservative philosophy. They were rooted in capitalism. The thing is, the issues that these people didn't have weren't with the actual capitalism. It's with the implementation of it, where it's disadvantageous to certain people based purely on the color of their skin and not based on the actual talent or the ability they have to produce. So when you look at somebody like Marcus Garvey worked with the Ku Klux Klan and Republican senators to try to draft legislation for federal funding for repatriation to Africa. Like, he literally sat with Ku Klux Klan members. They're like, yo, you want us out of here? I think this is our country. We don't need to be here. Give us money, set up the funding for us to go back to Africa, and we'll do it. And the Republican senators were like, no, this works out for everybody. It was a pragmatic solution. Again, I'm not saying that every Black person should have left America and went back to Africa. But what I'm saying is that if at that time you were a Black person that didn't feel like America was a country for you, and you wanted the opportunity to empower yourself and liberate yourself, and, you know, perfect case of Liberia in Africa. I mean, there's other discussions about whether, you know, the whole creation of Liberia was even just, because there were local tribes already living on that land. But that's a completely different discussion. But, you know, there were examples of repatriation, and at the end of the day, it was Republicans who were trying to assist Black people with that process. When you see Malcolm X and Farrakhan espouse creating your own nation, Black businesses supporting each other, these type of fundamental philosophy, these are rooted in capitalist and conservative beliefs. But again, it's just not, people don't readily identify them as conservative, but it is conservative. What do you think is important black owned business is? It's a conservative policy. You're consciously choosing where to allocate your finances. It's a conservative policy.
Damn, you know what? You're right. And it's like, you know, you've been saying that, you've been drawing those parallels, and, you know, just from, like I said, just me educating myself, I've definitely seen that I've been way more conservative throughout my entire life. You know what I'm saying? 27 years, like, I've always looked at it like that. I always appreciated, you know, supporting Black business. I've always been about community and Black people, you know, caring for themselves first and foremost. Now, when you dress that up as far as put a white face on it, that's a racist, conservative white dude. You know what I'm saying? But when you flip it and just show it, like, just have it your people and you focus it on your people, it doesn't look racist to me. So I felt like that was just like a contradiction from people who want to end racism, who want to do away with all of this, you know, isms in the country and all of that.
Here's the problem, because they're not completely 100% incorrect. The problem is perspective. And at the end of the day, we have to understand, you have to understand, this is a fundamental truth. The scales are tipped in a white person's favor. Like, at the end of the day, a black person and a white baby born in the same exact situation, the scales of society, no matter how far we quote-unquote gone in terms of racial equality or whatever, is the scales are tipped more in the favor of white people. So that's a fundamental fact. The difference is whether people accept that fundamental fact as reality and what do you choose to do about it. Again, certain people, I understand that fact, but I'm not going to let a lot of that fact to hinder my progress or determine where I end up as a person. Other people will. So again, if you choose to let something like that affect your personal outcome, then yeah, you'll feel that way that, you know, it isn't right because the scale is already tipped in their favor. But do like me, it's like, I know the scale is tipped in their favor. It got tipped a little bit better for us, but it's still tipped in their favor. But you know what? I'm going to make it do what it do, and I'm going to make it work for me. And I'm going to learn the system that I'm in, play the system, play the game, and beat it. That's it.
And you know what? That's always been my solution. Now, being solution-minded, I really didn't get on these solutions until about 3 or 4 years, right? When, you know, all of this stuff happened with Trayvon, Black Lives Matter, et cetera, et cetera. So when we're talking about solutions, like, people be trying to, like, nah, end capitalism and try to bring in some other, like, maybe Marxism or whatever they're trying to bring in. They're trying to dismantle capitalism. They're trying to dismantle the nuclear family. They're trying to dismantle all of these things because, in their mind, these are European white racist things. This is white supremacy. So I can't, you know, subscribe to this stuff. You know what I'm saying? The capitalism is the white man's ideals or the white man's idea, and I can't subscribe to it because it's inherently racist. It's built upon the fact that you have to have poor people in order to make it happen. Like, they have demonized the entire system instead of just going inside, educating yourself, and then using that education to build yourself, your household, your community, and then, you know, everybody can eat, you know, as we say. You know what I'm saying?
You just have to look at the progress of East Asian families for the last 50 years. They are the epitome of that example. I'm not doing an oppression Olympics in terms of saying who had it worse. I'm not going to say Asians had it worse than black people at any point in time. But if you look at the progress of an East Asian family in America, you know, over the course of the last 50 years, they're outperforming every other racial group again, and they're working within our system. And you know what the funny thing is? A lot of them are learning, you know, they're doing their education in America. They're actually building their wealth in America. Then they're actually taking their expertise and their wealth back to China and spending, you know, the latter part of their adult years utilizing that expertise and wealth back in their own home country. So they're actually the epitome of what black people should be doing right now in general. I mean, the Jewish people have been doing it for a while in terms of building up Israel, but, you know, that's a completely different, you know, they're pulling completely different strings to, you know, accomplish their goals.
Yeah, absolutely. And I've always been one of those people to watch the masters. You know what I'm saying? Watch the people who have perfected it. You know what I'm saying? I try to watch the greats and try to see what I can do to, you know, put my little game in the game. You feel me? And make it work for myself. And then and not to be like on some problem thing, but I did notice how after a while, like you said, you got to put that disclaimer in there. You got to put that caveat in there and be like, well, I'm not saying that one group had it worse than blacks or whatever, because a lot of people, when you say, yo, we can learn from the Jews or we can learn from the East Asians or whatever, then it's like, oh, well, black people had it worse. You know, you can't compare struggles. You can't compare, you know, how we came up. And it's like, yo, man, I understand what you're saying, but the solution is the solution. You dig what I'm saying? So, yeah, we can harp on the fact that slavery, Jim Crow, the black codes, you know, lynchings, all of that stuff is very, very, you know, true. But do you want to fester in that, or do you want to make the solutions? Now, I do want to touch on something that you did say, you know, as far as Marcus Garvey meeting with the KKK and all that other stuff. First and foremost, you already know if that would have happened today, Marcus Garvey would have got the crazy, crazy treatment. But let's not front and say he didn't get that type of treatment back then, too. And, you know, W.E.B. Du Bois, you know, all, you know, they call it the, you know, the black bourgeoisie or whatever, you know, got him out of here. Got Marcus Garvey deported back to Jamaica and all of these things. And that brings me to my next point. It's like, you know, as far as you, your political stances, even with, you know, the ideology, the way we live, the way we think, the way we worship and go to church, it's more conservative. But when you're openly wearing MAGA hats, when you're openly, you know, on a side of evil, as some would perceive it, you know, how has the community, friends, family, you know, passersby, whatever, co-workers, how have they been treating you based upon your political, you know, affiliations?
You know, the funniest thing is white liberals in the city look at me crazier than any black person, like, when I'm in Brooklyn, like, to be honest. Like, again, like I told you, apathy is a hell of a drug. And like I said, most black people don't have the time, resources, and or luxury to be worried about a lot of these political issues, a lot of this political theater. I mean, now the media is really trying to push it in people's faces, shove it down their throat as entertainment. But in general, you know, minorities in general are worried about taking care of their family, paying their bills, going back to work. You know, basic life things that are going on. They don't care about whose dossier got hacked or whose thing went to this or who voted for this or which person's rejecting this and they're rewriting this bill for this. Like, most black people don't care about most of that stuff. And at the end of the day, you know, I think, especially with black people, a lot of the shock factors are around. At this point, a lot of people already digested it, but regardless of my family, like, I've never held my tongue. So I think there's a difference, and that's what I hate, because a lot of the black conservatives that they end up putting on TV are, like, dummy, so it just, like, pisses me off. But, I mean, it's different when you're a black person just rocking with it, just to rock with it, and you can't actually stand up and articulate your points and defend your position. I think that's when people, you know, rightfully so, look at you like a clown or look at you like Uncle Tom or whatever, whatever. But anyone who knows me for the most part knows that I can defend any position that I hold. So if they want to even challenge it, they know that they're going to get prepared for an actual intellectual debate or some discourse about it. But they know they're not going to be able to just change my mind just because they say, oh, this isn't right. They're going to actually have to prove something isn't right to me. So people that I know, for the most part, honestly, by the time Trump came, they weren't even surprised that I was supporting him or anything. So, and like I said, man, trust me, man, I walk everywhere in Brooklyn, like, with a MAGA hat, and nobody even cares.
Word. See, this is what I love about real life versus the internet. You know what I'm saying? Like,
that's what I'm saying. It's a crazy dichotomy. Twitter will paint the world like a completely different picture, and it's not like that.
That's a fact. That's a fact. Because, you know, on the timeline, it's blood is boiling on the timeline. People are outraged. You know what I'm saying? Apparently, racism is running rampant. The KKK is holding marches in celebration of Trump winning. And, you know, it's just a racial warfare going on outside that no man is safe from. You know what I'm saying? But then you actually talk to people.
Not like that, really.
Yeah, you actually go outside and you actually just walking out there doing your thing. It's like, oh, there's really no racism out here. But on that same, on, you know, the other side of that coin, you'll have people who, man, because, you know, thoughts become things. We know that manifestation is a very real thing. So you have people that harp on this type of stuff all of the time on a timeline. And then through, you know, law of attraction and all of these things, they may have something come their way. And now when that something comes their way, this is an epidemic.
If you want to look at that, you got to factor in the media's involvement with all this. Like, how much
absolutely.
Is the media manifesting it? You know, so there's several factors at play. So that's the thing. Like, if people try to label it, and I tell people all the time, like, a magic fairy, Trump isn't a fairy that just sprinkled pixie dust and racists just appeared out of thin air and just magically appeared all over the United States. These people are grown-ass adults, and they always existed. These thoughts they had always existed. Like, so nothing new has happened. People may feel a little more braver. You know, they may have a little more spirit in what they say now, but at the end of the day, that person didn't change because Trump ran for president. They didn't just change magically.
Exactly. That's what I always felt. You know what I'm saying? It's not like Obama made me hate white people. You feel me? Like, you know what I'm saying? So I just felt like it was basically having somebody amplify however you're feeling. So if Trump is, you know, I was listening to a podcast, it's more of a liberal podcast out in California, and they were talking about how Trump, during, you know, during the campaign, were saying things in speeches which was like a dog whistle for white nationalists and, you know, white supremacists and all that other stuff, that he was saying certain phrases and things like that to get them going. And this is from a podcast. I mean, it's a comedy website or whatever, but when they're having, you know, actual conversation, people are starting to, you know, they're going to believe you. You know what I'm saying? And these outlets did a good job in painting, you know, these media outlets did a good job in painting Trump is like Adolf Hitler. You know what I'm saying? Like he was about to bring in the Nazi regime. And you'll still see that today. Like, you know, let's just call a spade, Trump is a Nazi, or, you know, his supporters are Nazis and all of that other stuff. Now, but I do want to, because around, that's when I started following you. You know what I'm saying? So even though that you of course were used to it by then, I was real new to it. And you are one next to Uncle Hotep, who I'm going to have on the show too, who were openly supporting Trump and all of these things. Like, of course, when you're a black person, period, with common sense, you understand the misdealings, you know, that Hillary Clinton was getting into and all of that other stuff. So it was more, for people like you and Uncle Hotep, it was an easier decision. But throughout that campaign, you know, what was the ups and downs for you? What were things that, you know, you saw Trump doing that you weren't, you know, rocking with? Some things that you were proud of? Was it, you know, 100% support? Was it 50-50? You know, was there even some Republican candidates or Libertarian candidates or whoever that you would want to win over Trump?
Well, initially coming in to the election, Brian, like from the when the actual field was announced, I actually was pulling for Rand Paul to win the nomination. I switched over to Trump once it pretty much became clear. I mean, it was still super early before anyone was on Trump, but I mean, I studied politics, so once I knew it was really impossible for Rand Paul to secure the nomination, Trump was the better, like, gamble in terms of who to support. And I honestly, outside of him and Trump, I probably wouldn't have supported anyone in that field. I really didn't like that field at all. But, I actually really like Rand Paul. He's a really pragmatic senator. Like, he has a lot of plans. Like, and I really, that's one thing that I honestly wish and I hope Trump does is start implementing and using Rand Paul more in his administration, because one of the things that I think will really benefit people, Rand Paul has an idea for things called, and I think he's trying to push it now, especially for his home state, it's called economic empowerment zones. So basically, you'll take, like, trouble areas like, you know, Detroit, Michigan, like, you know, Detroit, Flint. You know, basically, communities devastated by whatever, whether it's a factory left or whatever, devastated by whatever financial issues in urban minority populated areas, they would basically implement certain tax rates and regulations for that area specifically. So, say your neighborhood, you know, you live in Flint, Michigan. Flint, Michigan's individual and corporate tax rate for Flint, Michigan would get reduced to 5%. So every citizen of Flint, Michigan would have a 5% tax rate. Many businesses that opened up in Flint, Michigan would have a 5% corporate tax rate. So I think that something like that would be so great in terms of spurring economic activity and growth within, like, minor. But anyway, going back to Trump, that was, you know, that's just an example of why I really like a dude like Rand Paul, because he has, like, really smart, innovative ideas that still, you know, hold some fiscally conservative principles, but still give people who are disadvantaged, rightly so, a fair shot, or try to give them a fair shot at success. You got to understand, most people that voted for Trump voted for him for a fundamental basic reason, which is pretty much to burn the house down. Like, anyone who voted for Trump, who says they voted for Trump based on policy, if it's anything outside of tax policy and national security, they're pretty much giving you BS, because he's more moderate than conservative or liberal, if anything. He's really in the middle for most issues in terms of government, but he gets a little more conservative. Actually, he doesn't even get more conservative in terms of national security. He actually gets more libertarian. He's more of an isolationist than anything, which is something that most black people are. Most black people don't want to be getting militarily involved in all these other countries. They're like, yo, leave them alone. Like, let them do what they got to do. But again, that's called isolationism. And again, that sounds like a worse word. You know, people don't want to identify that America is supposed to be the moral leader, but, you know, replace moral leader with global police, then now it paints a different picture, even though it's fundamentally the same thing. So basically, like I said, most people who voted for Trump fundamentally voted for him to expose the system and burn it down, which I think he's doing an excellent job at. So during his campaign, even the things he's doing now, I'm not surprised. I'll tell people all the time, if you actually sat and listened to his speeches and listened to his campaign, he's doing exactly what he said he was. Even when he hires Wall Street people, he told people during campaign rallies that he's not going to be able to fill Washington with a bunch of outsiders. He's going to have to use some of the insiders to transition to clean the system out. So, again, all these things they try to use as gotcha moments. I'm like, if you literally were sitting there listening to him, he said he was going to do all these things. He's doing exactly what he said. That's why a poll they don't really want to mention is whether people believe he's following through on his campaign promises, which is something that he actually gets a high percentage of. Because most people, whether they agree with him or not, they believe that he's doing what he told people he was going to do. So, you know, in terms of that, like, all these little outbursts and stuff like that, again, I understand how the media operates. Every one of these outbursts, I've seen the actual full speech of them. He said some wild stuff, but you know what? He left the era of the end of political correctness, like, and that's what it is. So, you know, and I'm tired of political correctness, so I actually welcome the loose tongue, and I welcome that, you know, people can actually really voice their actual real opinions now. I'd rather know who my enemy is. Don't be a closet racist. Tell me you're racist so I can know who you are.
Absolutely, man. That's exactly how I give it up too. Now, I'm gonna give you my take on it. This is from somebody who really, like I said, doesn't know too much about politics. And I know that, you know, a lot of people vote on people who they like. You know what I'm saying? Now, I didn't vote this time around, but I did, of course, like Trump over Hillary for this Haiti off top. You know what I'm saying? For any other reason, like, you know what I'm saying? I understand how the Clinton administration gave it up when Bill was in office. I understand, you know, pretty much all the stuff that they did, especially to my people, black people. You know what I'm saying? So it was easy for me to disregard her. But I liked Trump's honesty. I liked the way he was more plain English. Like, one of the things, like, that everybody got fired up about was the what do you have to lose things. You know what I'm saying? And for me, because I live in North Philly, because so I'm saying, like, somebody who live in the hood, I'm like, yeah, man, this is what do we have to lose right now, dog? Like, I got a beer store, a Chinese food store in the after hours in a bodega on my block alone. It's a residential block. My block is lit all night long, so I hate it. You know what I'm saying? I want to get some sleep.
You know, like, you know what's so funny? I tell people all the time. I'm like, people were at Black Lives Matter's protests, right? They were holding up signs that said, you know, we need safer communities, we need better education, we need more jobs, like protesting all this stuff. You know, the moment Trump says he wants to increase, he wants to make black communities safer, increase jobs and all, people are complaining, oh, now Trump says all blacks are uneducated and don't have jobs. I'm like, bro, like, what do y'all want, sir? Like,
yo, it's so crazy, man. It's so crazy. And I'll give you a quick little anecdote that happened to me yesterday on Twitter. So I said, you know, feminism only exists because men dropped the ball, right? And I made a little thread about it. And, like, they gave me the Donald Trump treatment. They was like, nah, it's not because of that. I'm just like, yo, you don't hear what I just said. I said women created a movement because they felt like men weren't stepping up. So if that's not what feminism is about, then what the hell is it? Because women's rights goes under that umbrella. Men not feeling like you deserve the rights. It's like, y'all just want to disagree with me because I'm Hotep or whatever, but y'all not seeing that y'all actually agree with me. You know what I'm saying? Like, y'all don't see that we saying the same thing.
Although I don't disagree that that's one of the it could possibly intended or unintended consequences that happen through feminism, but I'm not sure that's not the argument I would make towards feminism, at least a black woman, because to me, the key for a black woman to realize the jig that happened with feminism is that what the feminist movement did was that it provided a stream of resources and opportunities that was specifically allotted to disenfranchised groups of people, specifically black people who led the movement, but it spread out to all minorities, quote unquote. What it now did was create a new category of minority called the white woman. So now, once a white woman was identified as a part of the minority group, they now provided the white community with access to opportunities that they previously did not have. So, for example, when a government contractor hires a white company owned by a white woman, who, you know, whether or not she got the funding from a white man who provides the funding and she's just a white woman that owns it on paperwork, that still counts as a minority, you know, a contract, an equal opportunity contract granted out to minorities. And, you know, when you look at the amount of contracts handed out to minority groups and the actual contracts handed out to black-owned minority companies, then I think people will start to understand and, you know, realize it. To me, that's the argument you should, that's the argument I personally make to black women in terms of feminism and why it isn't really for them.
Yeah, true. I agree. I remember that. That was one of the major things that I saw black people, in particular black women, saying that when it came to like affirmative action and all of that, that out of nowhere, you know, this is just, you know, their words to me, like out of nowhere, white women became a minority. You know what I'm saying? To where, you know, they'll get the same type of, I guess, preferential treatment or whatever that a black person would get based upon the fact that, you know, they're a smaller group, even though, like you said, she could be married to the richest white dude on the block. You know what I'm saying? And reaping all of those.
Part of the problem is that, you know, feminism was created by black women. So what happened is white women hijacked the movement, basically became the face of the movement, got all the benefits out of the movement. And at this point, black women are kind of left holding the bag because their position didn't increase as much as the white woman's position increased as a result of the movement. So, you know, that's where the dichotomy, and it's kind of like, you know, it's like a child, like you create it, so they want to hold on to it. But when you break down the meat and potatoes of it, it doesn't. And again, I'm not saying that black women don't deserve a movement. I'm saying that the modern-day feminist movement isn't built to help black women. You know, whether or not they need to create a separate movement on their own, that could be a completely different discussion. And I honestly wouldn't doubt that. And honestly, I think that may be the best solution, and I actually would probably welcome it. But because, you know, there are issues that black women face that black men don't face, and we have to be realistic about that situation. But again, even when I forgot that lady thing, that African feminist woman, when she was bringing up, like, you know, with transgender women.
Yeah, I've seen that.
But again, she's, again, a white feminist and a black feminist may have two different stances on a situation like that, and in what capacity they would want them in their movement. So again, I'm not saying who's right or who's wrong in that situation, but I'm just showing how a black woman and a white woman can both claim to be feminists and have two completely different objectives, two completely different agendas, and could look for two different outcomes for what they want out of feminism. So, you know, I think people need to take a long, hard look in the mirror and, you know, reevaluate what movements they affiliate themselves with.
Absolutely, man. I agree. I get into it with the feminists and, you know, all of that all the time. And that's, you know, like you said, that's a lot of men, sometimes even me, I'll admit, that we do not acknowledge the fact that black women do have things going on with them that are exclusive or, you know, that's pretty much set aside for them and their plight. You dig what I'm saying? And I never want to give it up to make it seem like I don't care about black women's rights and things like that. Like, I love black women. I support them 100% in all things that's positive. You dig what I'm saying? I just feel like these movements have caused such a divide amongst black men and black women. And it's like, we have to work together to get this. You know what I'm saying? I feel like when women are speaking, we should listen. I agree with them on that. When women are, you know, stating their grievances, we can't just be like, well, y'all do it too, or whatever. You know what I'm saying? I want to hear you. I want to help. I really want to be a part of it. But at the same time, I don't want to be disrespected. You feel me? And I feel like those elements are coming from those white feminists where they just, you know, bash and just shit on men. And I don't feel like that's overall what black women want. I feel like they want black men to step up and love on them. You know what I'm saying? And do what they need to do.
I definitely agree that a lot of that influence is coming from outside sources. But at the end of the day, we can't downplay what we're doing to our own women in our community at the same time. Like,
facts.
I mean, you know, at the end of the day, I mean, we all know people in our neighborhood. I'm not really associated with scumbag dudes like that, but I know scumbag dudes. I've grown up with surround scumbag dudes. I like, you know, I'll say what up to a dude. I don't mean he's like my man's like that, but I know dudes that have done women dirty. I know dudes that still do women dirty. You know what I'm saying? I know cats that don't claim their kids. I know cats that don't take care of their kids. Like, you know, I've seen it. You understand what I'm saying? So again, you got these black boys running around claiming to be men. They going around damaging our women at the same time too. So yeah, it's part outside influence, but part of it is actually with self-inflicted. It's we as black men are damaging these women. So now these damaged women are coming, presented to actual good men who want to take care of them, but, you know, he's looking at a damaged woman. And again, I think, you know, there's a lot, you know, our society's all fucked up. This whole social media, internet era is fucked up. A lot of people's perceptions of reality, of happiness, of, you know, fulfillment, of what things are. And, like, right now we're in an era where this isn't even a black and a white thing, but because black people are in worse situations, it kind of gets magnified and we miss out on things because of it. But people have this idea of perfection and reality and how things are supposed to be. Like, people have this ideal image of this is how a relationship is supposed to be, or this is how a marriage is supposed to be, or this is how success is supposed to look like, or this is how this is supposed to feel like. When it's not the case, and many times people are so focused on trying to chase this false image, because everyone's projecting this false image on the internet, and you're trying to reach that false sense of perfection that everyone else is projecting. Meanwhile, you're missing out on life, and you're missing out on, you know, the actual things that do create happiness. So again, even if you do want to cause advantage black women, that doesn't necessarily mean we got to give up on them. You know what I'm saying? Because we all damaged. Our people are damaged. We all damaged. Like, I'm damaged. Like, we all are damaged. Like, at the end of the day, no matter how weak you want, you claim you are or not, we all are damaged, whether you recognize it or not. So at the end of the day, we have to see our own people for people, and you got to recognize the damaged person and realize, yo, you know what? Maybe we could both fix each other.
You know, I know it's easy, especially for, like, the way I give it up on Twitter and stuff like that. I know it's easy for people to think that I'm just, like, anti-woman or whatever. But, like, I always hold men accountable. You know what I'm saying? For the bullshit they do. I can't stand deadbeats. I literally cut men off out of my life if they're not taking care of their responsibilities. You know what I'm saying? I don't condone that shit. You know what I'm saying? I check them whatever I can.
That's like a top sin. Like, that's, like, one of the top worst things you could do, like,
to not be there for your kids. Like, I can't stand that. That's degenerate behavior, and I'll never be joking and kikiing with a nigga that's like, all right, so for example, yesterday, me and my wife, we in the bedroom or whatever, we watching TV or, yeah, something like that. We was doing something, and dude outside, his daughter was with him. It was him and his daughter and his friend, two grown men and a daughter. The daughter asked him, you know, daddy, I'm hungry. This nigga tells her he ain't got no money, and the two grown men start laughing about it. You know what I'm saying? And I'm just like, yo, what part of that shit was funny? You know what I mean? Your daughter,
yo,
you know what I'm saying, just said, yo, she was hungry.
This? Hold on real quick. I got a better one for you. How about this? I'm with my girl eating 2 days ago, right? We had Applebee's, and we in the booth, and in the booth behind us, there was two chicks and, you know, a young girl, one of their daughters or whatever. So it looked like a mother, daughter, and probably like the mother's sister or something like that, or a cousin or something. And, you know, some dude came through, you know, trying to bag whatever. So they were sitting there talking with him or whatever. You know, he got them little drinks and they're chilling or whatever. Dude eventually ends up leaving. Me and my girl just eating. You know, we ignoring that. She had actually sitting close to them so she could hear the conversation. I at this point can't really hear what's going on with them. So I didn't know if they knew him from before or not, whatever. So he gets up and he leaves or whatever, and one of the girls walks with him out to the door, and then she comes back, and they're like, yeah, I'm the leaking, like, please, you know, I just needed him for some drinks or whatever, and they're laughing about it, and then this girl that's there, this daughter that is there, she's no older than 10, 11 years old, you know what I'm saying? So she's sitting there watching her mother and aunt or whoever, you know, use this dude for drinks or whatever. And again, I don't judge people, man. If you want to do that, you can do it. It's all good. Like, it's sure you do that. Like, I don't knock the hustle, like, to be honest. But, yo, to do that in front of, you know, a young, impressionable black girl, I'm like, what kind of message are you sending that girl? And me and my girl was crazy. We was talking about it, like, on the way home. And I was just like, it's so messed up. Because, you know, you wish you could save, but you can't save everyone. And, you know, you just sit back and think, like, damn. Like, this girl is so impressive. She's like a sponge right now. She's just absorbing all of this around her. And I'm like, how is that going to manifest in her life? How is that going to dictate the action she takes as an adult going forward? You know, it's crazy, man.
Yo, man, that's real talk. You know what I'm saying? The black man and the black woman definitely got to do better in loving each other, loving themselves, and moving forward, especially for the youth. If not anybody, if not for yourself, man, do it for the youth, man. Because, like, y'all not thinking about this stuff when y'all making these kids. You know what I'm saying? Not everybody, of course. People, there are responsible parents out there. I'm one of them. You know what I'm saying? So it's just that at the end of the day, yo, these kids are looking at you, man. They listening. And you know, a lot of people, and it's so funny because they'll tell you, kids are smarter than what you think. Kids are smarter than what you think, but still treat them like they not. You know what I'm saying? Like, they still
exactly.
try to hide things from them.
You know something. You're like, how you know about that? Because you've been talking about the shit since I've been
followed. Like, yeah, you a swiper, my nigga. I know how to swipe now. Like, you know what I'm saying? But, you know, I feel you. So, black women, you know, if you're listening, understand that, you know, me and Carl, we understand that black men have dropped the ball. Black men need to step up, and we doing our part. You feel me? And, you know, we don't give these niggas no skates, man. We don't give them no leeway when it comes to that, man. We understand the importance of black men being pillars in the community and stepping up and doing what they need to do. So, you know what I mean? But getting back to the politics thing. Now, we was already talking about the media frenzy. Now, when it comes to Trump, like I said, I tweeted about it, like, Trump is the first president in my lifetime. I don't know if this is in, you know, all presidents or whatever, but in my lifetime, he was the first one to call out the media, you know what I'm saying, and call them fake news. It's one of the greatest bars. Like, I call niggas every day fake news. Like, whenever I'm arguing or debating.
That's not going away no time soon. That fake news is here to stay.
Right? Yes, yes. So, you know, this just the rawness of all of that. You know what I'm saying? What's real and what's fake when we talk about Trump? Because I know as an informed voter, as an informed Trump supporter, that you don't agree with everything Trump is saying. Now, I everybody's tight right now about the federal spending cuts right now. You know what I'm saying? Like, people are like, I remember a certain feminist, I'm not going to say her name, you know what I'm saying? She was, you know, she took the headline, and you know how people love taking the headline, putting their tweet on top of the quote tweet, and get those 10,000 retweets. Everybody know that's the game. You know what I'm saying? You find a CNN article, MSNBC, that says some inflammatory headline, then you jump on top of it with some witty shit that's going to go viral. We do, you know, everybody knows that. So there were, what was it? Federal spending cuts for what? Planned Parenthood? And the feminist was like, people are gonna die. Like, that was the sentiment. You feel me? And it's like, when we're talking about, they're talking about, what? Closing the Department of Education by next December, you know, December 2018, and all of this stuff. Like, when you're seeing Trump making his moves, man, what's, as far as cause perspective, because you can't tell people how to feel, but as far as cause perspective, what's good and what's bad, man? What should we be focusing on? What shouldn't we be focusing on? What's fake news and what's not fake news?
I can't tell a person what to focus on and what not to focus on because different things matter to different people. For example, national security may matter to a military family a lot more than a person whose father's a Wall Street banker. You get what I'm saying? Fiscal policy may matter more to that Wall Street banker than another person because his job may depend on it. You know, I can't tell people what to worry about. As far as black people, what they should, I definitely think black people should be a lot more invested in economic policy than a lot of the other, you know, a lot of the more inflammatory and rhetorical things like, getting people to apologize for something or having someone say the right thing. I think we should be more focused on getting actual policy measures that bring in some tangible solutions or results to the things that we're facing. So,
yo, as a matter of fact, at the end of one of the Grapevine debates, we're going to touch on that in a minute. You were saying, like, it was like you and a young lady, y'all was having a debate, and then they had you speak at the end of the segment and speaking on the economic thing. So, economically, the Trump administration? Can you give my listeners that, you know, as far as black people, what we should be focusing on when it comes to the economics?
Well, the funny thing, when you talk about economics, that's one of the things that I kind of pissed about the Trump administration. I really wish he would attack tax cuts first, but he's getting a lot of pressure from basically the Republican establishment to attack healthcare first, so that's kind of why he's like stuck dealing with this healthcare thing. So everything else is kind of getting a back burner to that. So I can't, you know, he hasn't done anything. There's nothing right now that he's done that I can say, oh, he's doing this. This is going to help the economic situation of any black person or anything like that. He just hasn't really been able to touch that. He's just, his hands are tied with healthcare right now and national security for the most part. But I do believe when he does get around to the tax cuts, which I guarantee are going to happen, it's definitely going to happen. And hopefully, if he gets the infrastructure, legitimate infrastructure spending within the first term, I think that's when you're going to start seeing a shift in opinion, at least in terms of minorities, about Trump. I think that's when you're going to start hearing the murmurs of, well, he's not that bad, you know, things that they... People won't necessarily come all the way out and say, I like him now, but they're going to be like, yeah, it wasn't as bad as I thought it was going to be. But what I will mention in terms of regards to fake news, I mean, what I tell people all the time, I'm like, you have to understand, if every single media outlet hates one person, part of you has to start thinking, like, you know, when the entire establishment, like, is unified, left and right, that hates one person, you kind of have to recognize that as someone that can be a legitimate threat to the establishment that has that power. And I think people really overlook that fact. I think people just basically banking on, you know, Trump is just that evil that everybody hates him. But at the end of the day, we went through George Bush era. We went through, you know, we went through Richard Nixon era. We went through an era with some pretty fucked up presidents. And there was never a moment when the entire establishment was united as one against one person like that, as they are right now for Trump. So I think it's something of note that people should pay attention to and should kind of recognize that this power to really put a dent in the actual establishment and the status quo order.
The logic, like you said, would be that, well, shit, if the left and the right hate him, then it must be Trump. You know what I'm saying? It's not, they don't put it on the fact that the establishment just could be, you know, fucked up and they couldn't be helping people. You know what I'm saying? Instead of being like, well, shit, if everybody hates Trump, it must be Trump's fault. You know what I'm saying? Instead of just realizing
that. Yeah, we just got to be the most evil person on the world. But no one stops and thinks, maybe the establishment has historically systematically oppressed for the last couple of centuries. Maybe they're scared that they're going to get exposed.
That's what I'm thinking.
Yeah, but this is the first time a dude came into power that didn't need funding. Like, literally, we've had past presidents that were rich, business owners. You know, Reagan was rich, Jimmy Carter was rich. You know, we've had presidents that were rich coming into office. But we've never had any president with the wealth, or any presidential candidate with that type of wealth. I mean, we've had Nelson Rockefeller, he's pretty up there. But we never had one that didn't need any type of support. Since any bank, any institution, or any big funder, like at the end of the day, he really didn't. And at the end of the day, you can hate Trump all you want, but there's some genius in the methods of his madness. At the end of the day, you have to recognize that he spends historically, proportionally, he spends historically lows in terms of campaign spending and financing. To get the return on investment when he spends, like, he spent pennies on a dollar for advertising. They estimate he got over like $2 billion worth of free promo and news just with inflammatory statements alone. Like, damn. It was a madness. Like, people don't understand what he was doing. And if you look at, I'm talking about, and then the funny thing, when you combine the amount of money Hillary Clinton and Bernie Sanders spent trying to get Trump out the paint, I mean, they go get funding for healthcare alone. You got people, there's $1 billion combined spent over in that primary alone, in that election cycle. You know what I'm saying? So we complain. These are the same people complaining about we need to help people. We need to, you know, put money back in the poor. We need to feed the hungry. We need to do this. We need to do that. But you're spending $1 billion on the election process. And nobody wants to even question reforming that whole process. You know what I'm saying? And even certain things, like when Trump wants to implement term limits, which I'm pretty sure he's probably not going to get that on the table, but they really forced him to kind of pull back the rhetoric on that. But you would think that the public would jump for joy that someone actually wanted to put term limits on Congress, but all the media just ignores it. Like, why wouldn't there be unanimous support for term limits on congressmen? Like, why is that even a partisan issue?
Dead ass.
You know what I'm saying? Like, but again, people get the media, and this is the problem with the media, they put so much energy in shaping the narrative that they control what people care about and don't care about. So if the media doesn't tell people to care about that, they won't care about it.
That's a fact, man. Like, I think, I honestly, I got to do a whole episode on how TV raised us and, like, how the media dead-ass raised us, bro, because, like, it's very serious, yo. I've seen people, intelligent people, college-educated degrees and all of that, and they just parrot what a news anchor told them. No research, no independent research on their own, no Googles. Nobody has done any Googles. They listen to Van Jones, Don Lemon, Rachel Maddow, whoever these people are, they listen to these people, you feel me? And that's just word. That's gospel. And they take it and run with it.
Let me tell you, man, I'm going to tell you why that is. And I'm going to tell you why this is a problem, why it doesn't matter your educational level. You got a doctor's degree and still be subject to this bias and brainwashing. Yo, funny story about one of my best friends got married in France, right? Long story short, the wedding was in like some little small village in like the outskirts of France. It's like a beach town or whatever. So while we were out there, I actually got to meet some of the people that live in that town. It's funny, the community's crazy. Like, they have a beautiful beach on the town, but they're, like, miles away from, like, any, like, you know, cops. And I'm like, who cleans the beaches? They're like, you know, we all do the community work. We just, it's our beach. We just keep it clean. And I was so bugged out because I couldn't understand that concept. But anyway, when I went, I ended up meeting a dude. He smokes or whatever. So he invited me in his crib to smoke or whatever. So, you know, he had his family, but his family wasn't at home at that point. So me and my little peoples, we go in his crib, we start smoking, and we in his living room. And right where our TV would be, like, in the living room, it's like a huge bookshelf. And I'm looking around, and I'm like, yeah, y'all don't have any TVs? And he's like, yeah, no, the TV in the bedroom. And then I'm like, oh, so when your kids don't have a TV in their room? And he's like, nah, what do they need a TV for? They got a toy, they got books, like, what do they need a TV for? If they need to watch TV, they can come watch it in the room, but why would they need a TV? And it was so funny, because I'm asking him what I'm thinking is a basic question, but he didn't understand the concept, like, why do I need a TV? Like, he looking at me stupid, and then that's when it, like, clicked for me, and I'm like, yo, we really in a box. Like, we really don't understand how we're in a, like, we're trapped in, like, a cycle, like, in a box. And his whole concept of life, he's like, yo, why would kids need a television?
Yeah, like, why do we need news 24/7? Like, why do I need to have the TV on while I sleep? Why do I need the TV for real? Like, I only use it for entertainment purposes. No different than my bench set. You know what I'm saying? No different than any other activity I engage in. It's not an integral part of my life to where we got to tune in. Like, we literally tune in. Millions of people tune in and live tweet shows and award shows and move, like, all of that. That's how we give it up. Like, the media is like a culture over here. But I do want to know, I'm Doe Dupes, dog, I'm a stoner, man. What is the French gas like, bruh?
Yo, you know what's the funniest thing? Here's the funniest thing about France. Yo, you actually can't, it's hard, Europe has strict laws on weed. So, it's hard to actually get weed in Europe in general, in France and stuff. You actually will get hash faster than weed. So what most people actually do in Europe is they actually get by hash, and they mix hash with tobacco. They'll buy, like, tobacco, they'll take a cigarette, they'll mix hash with tobacco, and they roll that up, and that's what they smoke out of. So they actually don't even really smoke weed for the most part in France. It's hash. It's actually hard to get weed out there.
Oh, you know what? That's so crazy. Yeah. It's so crazy. I was, I'm a big fan of Spitter, you know what I'm saying, Currency or whatever, and he was doing an interview out in Denmark. And he was talking to him about that. He was like, yeah, I see that, you know, a random European kid, like, in the crowd had passed him a joint. You know what I'm saying? You know, like they do, whatever. He hit it, and he tasted the tobacco with it. And he was like, nah, like, I don't smoke them. Like, you know what I'm saying? So that's crazy. But, yeah, man, TV is definitely rotting our minds, man. You know, A couple of my friends, like Ali Shakur, my man Vibe High, you know, he says that people come over his crib and they shocked to see that there's no TV in the living room, and they dead ass be befuddled, like, yo, so what do you do? Like, what other things is there to do in your home if not watching TV? You know what I mean? And it's crazy.
What? Yo, let me tell you something, but again, it's not, you know, French people are fucked up, but they have some really good qualities. The one thing I do about I want to front on French people is, like, they have this concept, it's called, like, when it translates in English, it'll be called, like, the art of life, and they really focus on living. So, for example, like, you know, dinner, you know how, you know, your mother makes dinner, everybody grabs whatever plate, one person goes in his room, one person goes in the living room, everyone's doing their thing, like, in France, for the most part, it's not like that. Like, not even for Sunday dinner, like, every day dinner, like, the family eats together. Like, you know, the family talks to the family over dinner. Like, they go through that process. Like, you know, it's not like a quick meal. Like, they sit down, enjoy food with family. Like, they do certain little nuances that, you know, we take for granted. But again, these are the fundamental things that make people happy at the end of the day. That's why you can have a dude making $350,000 running around in this rat race in New York City, and he's fucking depressed, and he's on antidepressants for the rest of his life because he has no social connection outside of, you know, people he gets money with.
Yeah, family is very important, man, for real.
That's the biggest thing we lost, and honestly, and I tell black people, man, if we build our own families, like, our families will take care of each other, and then that's how our community will take care of itself. But if the fundamental family structure isn't taking care of itself, like, if brothers aren't taking care of their own brothers, if a cousin, you know, if an aunt can't take care of a niece or nephew when a brother or sister does the wrong thing, like, then you can't expect the community to take care of that family when something goes wrong. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly, man. So that's a dope life experience, man. You come with a wealth of gems. I knew I made the right decision calling my nigga Carl, man. You know what I'm saying? So... Salute, man. So let's get into the Grapevine, man. I fucks with the show.
Yeah.
You are
now,
on
the
your...
Grapevine is definitely... Your shout out to Ashley and Amanda, like, the great... And Donovan, too. Yeah, the Grapevine is a dope show, man. I was definitely... One of my frat brothers, Doug, he put me onto it. So I was definitely blessed to be a part of that. And I really see big things happening for that in the future. You know what I'm saying? We just got to keep grinding out on it, building up our subscription base and, you know... Hopefully somebody sees the potential and put some bread up on it.
Absolutely, absolutely. And I'm, you know, I went through the process, you feel me? I'm going to be on the show, and I'm very excited. We did, you know, I had the conversation with Ashley, and she's a real bright person. I really rock with her show. I rock with, you know, her energy and all of that. You know what I'm saying? Now, you already know how I give it up, bro. Like, you, I agree with you, like, 99% of the time. Like, there's other people who make good points, you know what I'm saying? But, you know... You basically, you know, Amanda, you on your island on that show, you know what I mean? And so how does that feel? Like, how does that feel being the odd man out on most things going on the panel discussions?
The funniest thing is I'm an odd man out for most things in life because, again, like, you know, I still got, like I said, man, all my family, you know, I got family friends that are like, you know, quote-unquote, like, you know, they like the black people, so... Just because I have these beliefs don't mean that all the people I hang out around believe this. Actually, none of the people I hang around believe this. My girl don't even agree with my political beliefs. You know what I'm saying? So, like, it's not like that. So, I'm used to having to defend everything I believe in because, for the most part, everyone that's always around me doesn't. And it's funny because my family, I come from a family of outspoken people. So not only do people not agree with me in general, they are willing to go to bat with me about their, you know, disagreement. They're willing to try to argue me out of it or prove me wrong. So I'm already used to that. So by the time I got to that show, it was like, it's regular. It, you know, that shit is actually entertaining for me, like, honestly, like, that.
Yo, because I was like, son, how is my nigga Carl not telling this nigga to shut the fuck up while he talking right now? Like, it's so crazy.
You know what's funny? And that's honestly something I learned with age because, it's something I still struggle with to this day. Like, I ain't even going to hold you. Like, inside, internally, I'm like, yo, I'm about to slap the shit out of this motherfucker. Like, but I'm going to hold about the puzzle, but, you know, the funniest thing is, what I realize is, especially when you're arguing unpopular position, which most of my positions are, the thing is, you have to be so tuned in on the pure facts. Like, you got to understand, your popular position is not going to get picked up by most people regardless. No matter what you say, no matter 100% you're right. But the few people that can potentially get converted or potentially to understand your opinion, you're going to have to reach them with pure logic. You're not going to be able to make any emotional appeals. The emotional appeals is already invested in what they already believe in. You have to logically prize them out of that. So, as you know, as I've gotten older, you know, I realized that, you know, showing emotion, you don't really get your point across showing emotion like that. So, and what I noticed is that you actually diminish another person's point when you let them show their emotion while you're not showing your emotion. So a lot of times, you know, when I see dudes get emotional, it's like I know I got them. Like, it's like, yeah, I got you. Now you look like, wow.
Because I ain't going front. Like, I follow the show, which in turn means I follow you. And, of course, I tune in for Carl. Like, I tune in for the other... What's my name?
Yeah,
for sure. So, it's like, you right, bro. You right. Because I already agree with you. Because a lot of the stuff that they talk about is, like, liberal. You know, it's educated. It's intellectual, for sure. You know what I'm saying? It's good substance. It's just that I disagree fundamentally. You dig what I'm saying? So, I'm already more in tune with what, as soon as Ashley is like, all right, I'm going to let Carl speak and see what's going on. Because I can't wait for my nigga to say something that I know I'm going to agree with. But I'm already agreeing with you. I don't have to be convinced, you feel me? And if somebody is neutral, I'm not with such and such, I'm not with Carl, I just want to know the facts, right? You're not going to get that woman or get that man by doing the same thing Son is doing if you know Son is wrong. So if he's telling you, oh, well, you said him instead of her, like, you got to respect the pronouns or whatever it is, and you just like, man, my fault, oh, and you moving on, and he's still harping on it, he looks bad. You want to get back to the discussion and talk about the facts, but he want to keep railroading your points to be able to talk about something arbitrary. Somebody that's neutral looks at that and is like, all right, clearly Carl is getting the Donald Trump treatment. Like, regardless of what he says, whatever is going to happen is going to be a problem. So let me listen more in tune to what he has to say, because clearly the other end is more emotional. You know what I mean?
You know what's funny? Like, even if you look at my channel, I can't remember I forgot what was the first episode. It might have been the Disney Challenge. I can't remember, but it was one of the earlier episodes where dudes was coming at my neck, and I kind of slipped up, and I kind of got emotional. And I say emotional, when I say emotional, I mean emotional in terms of, most people probably wouldn't consider it emotional, but I was visibly worked up, so that, you know, I consider that emotional, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And it was so funny, I noticed that, but then I was like, damn, when I watched the episode over, and I really thought, I'm like, damn, you fucked up, like, you really let him get you out of character. So then I was like, yo, I'm not going to let it happen again. But the funniest thing that happened, my favorite part about the grapevine is the comment section. I'm not even going to hold you. Like, I read them comment sections all the time. I don't comment in them, but I read them. Some of the panelists do. I don't. I just let people go. And that should be having me rolling, because people hate me on it. And it's just the funniest. They have the most creative insults ever. But the funny thing I've noticed is, like, over episodes, especially, like, you know, after I really cut that, I don't get emotional thing out. Slowly but surely, you'll see people that, you know, three episodes go, oh, I hate Carl, I want him to get kicked off, and then he start going up. Yeah, I mean, he was kind of making sense this episode, or, you know, damn, why didn't he let him talk? Like, the guy, people never let him talk, to the point of a lot of people are starting to really recognize how people start cutting me off on it and stuff like that. So, again, it's a method to the madness. Like, I'll let a dude cut me off on a situation to prove my point that, you know, people don't want to hear facts when they're presented to them.
Yo, that's a good strategy, bro, because first episode was Trump part one, you know what I'm saying? That was the one, and the young lady, light-skinned lady with the shortcut, she's talking about how, you know, Hillary's program saved her life and all of that, and you know what I'm saying? Like, somebody, you know, somebody who don't know no better, or somebody who doesn't know Hillary's track record, they'd be like, oh my God, of course I'm gonna vote for Hillary. But then my man Carl come, you know what I'm saying? And he like, yo, listen, the facts is this. You know what I mean? So,
and then that's the funniest thing. And then the thing that is so crazy, so the thing thing that got overlooked, and I reason this part that got overlooked, I said it, but I think it kind of got overlooked because, again, I think that was the episode actually that I kind of felt like I got more emotional than I should have. But right now, she works a six-figure job, you know, through one of the big banks, you know what I'm saying? So, again, you wanted other them to do all of this, but I'm pretty sure you didn't have no problem when they were bailing out your company you work for. You know what I'm saying? Ooh. Because that's your fault to get 6-figure salary. That's the, you know, that's the hypocrisy that comes into people's realities. It's like, you know, you want to, you know, quote unquote, look good, but yo, you're benefiting off the same corruption that you're pretending doesn't exist because it's the candidate that you want.
Dog, I say that shit all of the time, son. Like, the hypocrisy is so crazy when they do that. Like, they will literally get you to feel bad, like, get a white person to feel bad about slavery and then eat, wear, whatever, like, just shop with slave-made pieces of apparel. Like, it's so crazy. They will browbeat you about something and then benefit from the same people, the same factions, the same corporations who exploit these things, man. It's crazy to me, yo.
Slave labor will never be a big enough issue to make people stop buying Jordans, you know what I'm saying? Like, and at the end of the day, and people will say they care about human rights, you know what I'm saying? But you do, you.
Man,
and listen. I'm not sitting here and say I don't own a pair of Nikes. I'll buy Nikes, but I'm also not sitting here. I understand that life is unfair, so I'm not going to sit here and say, like, you know, I'm a global ambassador for things. I'm more of a nationalist than anything. So, you know, I'm more concerned about improving the quality of life of actual poor Americans than actually poor people globally. Although I do would like to do that as well. But, I mean,
first and foremost,
there's baby steps, right? So until we, how could you improve the quality of life of everyone globally if you can't even improve the life of your worst citizens in your own country, like?
Exactly.
And that's another fundamental problem, and especially when we spend billions and billions of dollars propping up all these other countries when you have people going hungry, homeless within your jurisdiction. Like, it doesn't make sense. And especially when you're telling people you don't have money to do it.
Yeah, that's the craziest part, because I remember they was talking about how Obama sent such and such billion over somewhere, I think Israel or whatever. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, that 38, right before he left, he gave Israel $38 billion for missile defense.
Yeah, you know what I'm saying?
You know what I'm saying? Like, and Flint, the grant he tried to get approved for Flint just got through, you know, fucking 90 days into Trump's administration. But again, like I tell people, if he wanted Flint to get that money as soon as possible, there are ways and there are legislative procedures to make it happen for him to circumscribe and go around Congress. So, again, I tell people all the time, man, you can't judge what people say. You got to base their motivations on their actions. And that's the only thing that speaks at the end of the day. People could talk and don't want to say, I want to do this, say, I want to do this. What do they actually do?
Exactly. So I got three more points that I want to get to, you know what I'm saying? So the first one is, like we were talking about, on a local level. As far as, you know, your party is concerned, because like I said, I'm not really in it. You know, I don't really know what's going on. You can only speak for New York, I can only assume. But if you have any more information on other local Republicans or conservatives, you know, let me know. But so what, as far as Republicans, conservatism, libertarianism, and all this other stuff on a local level, what does that look like?
Listen, man, it's trash out here. Like, I wouldn't even have an honorable mention out in New York. Like, that whole, out here is just trash. Like, there's no good candidates, no nothing. That's why you got a clown like Bill de Blasio as mayor, because pretty much you just have to win the Democratic primary in New York. Once you win that, you're going to get whatever seat you're going for. So, and honestly, even nationwide, a lot of the people running for a lot of the local positions that I'm aware of are, like, trash. You know what I'm saying? So, I can't even sit here and say that, you know, recommend someone that people should follow. I mean, I like Rand Paul. Tim Scott is cool. He's okay on certain things. You know, I really can't give you. But what I will tell people is that a lot more people need to look into local government and the local legislative processes and looking into running for local office, because a lot of people are under, you know, impression that it takes a lot more than it actually does to run for office. Like, the same way that drug dealer could pop up a dude for a record label, he could slide you a couple stacks to get a campaign running, you know what I'm saying, for a local whatever, the local assemblyman. And again, people don't realize, you know, I could speak for New York. I can't speak because I know the payment structure for New York. But, like, for example, if you're, like, an assemblyman, New York State Assemblyman gets around, like, $80,000 base, and then you get bonuses based on how many committees you join. So that's when you see all these congressmen or people say they're on the House and Ways Committee, or they're on this. They get, you know, that's like an extra, you know, 5-10 G's for every committee they own, you know what I'm saying, added on to their salary. If you run for, like, New York City Council, I think that's 120 grand, you know, base salary, and that's not counting committees that you're on. So, like, again, you know, you can be a successful, lucrative person running for local government. And when you actually look at the voter tallies, what people don't realize, even when there's a big election or whatever, the further down the name is toward down the ballot, the less votes that actually come into that category. So, you know, say if you got the mayor, you know, city council, you got the mayor, city council, blah, 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 you got judges at the end. By the time you get to judges, most people who voted didn't even push out that ballot. So when you look for these small city clerk, you know, county clerk, city, these smaller positions, they're decided by a matter of thousands of people. So you could say 1,500 for some smaller areas. Like, I mean, for New York, state assembly races dictated by a couple thousand people, and this is a huge city. But for that district, for that state assembly district or that city council district, a couple of thousand people could get you into office. So you got to remember, people, a base number of people are going to vote Democrat or Republican regardless. So when you look at that, all you got to do is rustle up a couple thousand people. You add up your church, your community center, people you know at work, et cetera, et cetera. A lot of people have the networks. They don't even realize that they have enough of a network to run for the local office in their own communities. And then now that's when you make real change, because now the ball is in your court and you do what you want for your community. Mm.
Damn, that's real bars. Like, I have a local politics episode where we talk about that. I was talking to a councilman. He was councilman at the time, Jewel Jones, out of Michigan. Okay. He was out in Inkster and all of that. Now he is state rep. You know what I mean? Youngest dude in Michigan, or at least the youngest dude in the country. You know what I'm saying? So salute to Jewel Jones. Next point, because that was good gems right there. Next point.
And you see, I don't know who replaced him, but I hope it was another brother that, you know, followed similar footsteps. You know what I'm saying? As he moves up, that other seat got to get cool. You know, another person got to occupy that, you know, within that same network. That's how you keep control, systematic control in the communities.
Facts. So, how do you feel about Black Americans specifically just making an entirely different political party? All 44 million of us.
Black people, I don't think it's conducive for Black people. I mean, population-wise, for Black people to make their own specific political party. I mean, it could work. And, I mean, I'm not saying it, and I don't say that to say that benefits can't happen from a Black political party being created. I think a better and smarter approach would be to basically employ the approach that most East Asians and Jewish people do, is they approach their political power through soft power. So they employ strategies through funding and think tanks. So you gotta understand, certain they got these little caucuses in Congress, Freedom Caucus, these little ones. There's certain think tanks that have more power than any caucus in Congress, you know what I'm saying? It's to a point right now that congressmen are passing through legislation that are word for word documents that they are receiving from think tanks. So you can be way more, Black people can be way more effective pooling their resources through soft power means like think tanks, political action committees that can prop up candidates that will work on their behalf than forming a Black political party. Because one, we don't have the population, you know, we're not Hispanic, so we don't have the population to just basically stand, quote unquote, on our own and try to go against the entire American structure. Two, you know, there is some level of interdependence. We're going to need to work with other groups at some point. So to make a political party that's exclusively for blacks may not be conducive to, you know, black advancement as a whole, because it may provide some limitations on the people that will want to work with us and the things we'll be able to accomplish. But like I said, a black think tank and black political action committee, to me, would do 10 times the efficacy that a political party would.
Good gems, man. Yo, I appreciate you, man. You really laced me with a lot of information. You know what I'm saying?
Absolutely.
So before we close out, man, let them know where they can find you, man. And, you know.
Yeah, you can check me out, you know what I'm saying, on Twitter, Instagram, _thecivilright. Everything spelled correctly. You know, we got some things in the works. You know, I'm not ready to make some announcements yet, but we got some things in the works coming soon. Y'all can check us out on the Grapevine YouTube, search that, the Grapevine TV. And, yeah, man, just holler at me, man. I'm out here.
All right. One last thing, man. Some parting gems you want to give the people, man. I always try to leave on the gym.
Yo, life is short, B. And, yo, just take time out and appreciate it. Like, you could still protest. You could still be upset. You can be outraged on the conditions and the bad things that's going on in the world. And you could be politically aware. You could be conscious of things, fucked up things. But at the end of the day, yo, you got to take some time out and smell these roses, man. We all out here living. Two hands, 2 feet, walking, breathing. Yo, we got to appreciate it, man. Well, we got it.
All right, man. Thank you again.
No doubt.
Sometimes I be wanna say fuck the world. I don't give a fuck. I shoot it out with all you bitches. Bitches don't love me. Young black nigga fighting the world, nigga. Everywhere you go, bitches throwing rocks, nigga. Man, a nigga in a Lamborghini. Seen a Cuban kilo, I was 15. Huh. Dylan Yayo never had my teeth cleaned. Restricted license, but I'm so divisive. I know the snipers and I flow the nicest. Fresher than Groovy Lou at a Coogee shoot. Multiple weapons in my new Gucci boots. The bank accountant caught the Holy Ghost. I say the bank accountant caught the Holy Ghost.
That was episode 19.5, ladies and gentlemen. Black Conservative. Thank you for listening. Thank you for tuning in. Thank you for subscribing. Thank you for reviewing. Tell your friends to subscribe and review. Tell your family to subscribe and review. Tell everybody, man. We're trying to get Intelligent Rebel all over the world, man. Because everybody needs this information. You dig what I'm saying? Thank you to Carl for coming through and dropping those gems. He definitely gave me a different perspective. He definitely gave me a different point of view in the way I've been moving in America according to the political spectrum. So, that's very dope. Final thoughts. Of course. I wrote about it in my book. We have to start being more involved in the political level. Specifically in our local elections. Specifically our judges, our aldermen, our councilmen, our mayors, our governors. All of those people in our community who hold office and clearly are making good money based upon policies made for and or against us. We have to be more attentive. We have to start going to these meetings. We have to start voting. We have to start grooming and vetting our own politicians to make moves on our behalf. And if you're going to be honest about the situation, you got to start them young, high school age, because they run your entire background, man. They Google, your Google searches, all of that. So you definitely want to be as squeaky clean as possible. And you want to be able to have people to represent your community in a positive, proactive, instead of reactive way. It's very important. So yes, we need to start grooming our own politicians out here to make moves on our behalf. You know what I'm saying? So anybody who is interested in politics, who is trying to make a change in their community, please start on the local level. Shout out to Councilman Jewel Jones, who is now State Representative Jewel Jones, out there in Michigan, man. Salute. I definitely want to have him back on the show because his attitude towards his career as a politician showed exactly why he is in the position he is in now. And I'm happy for him. You know, he posted a bill that he voted on and that they won on. So I'm happy to see those types of things. You know, the black female judge. You dig what I'm saying? Youngest in the state. I think she was 21 when she became a judge. So just understand that it's going to take our participation to make a change. You dig what I'm saying? Have to make the formal announcement. I'm sorry that I haven't. The Intelligent Rebel Squadcast is an official podcast under the Greatness Podcast Network, founded by Christopher Hines, man. Shout out to him and thank you for the opportunity. If you guys have what it takes, you rock with this message, and you really believe in changing your community, come on over to Hotep. HotepNation.com/recruiting, man. Become Hotep. And as always, stay intelligent and stay rebellious. Squad.
All the arguments, you never call the law. I was never home, but hid the money in the walls. Constant visits from the ATF. So I copped some cribs in the ATL. Martha Stewart decorated both. Snoop Dogg donated the smoke.